Yeah. And it goes on from generation to generation. Look at what T.E. Lawrence dealt with in Arabia around.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesday, and we will welcome your calls. If you have something you'd like to talk about, or you can talk about what I'm talking about, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, we are living in one of the most important weeks of your lifetime, as the whole economic system of the entire world is beginning to contract, and we've been talking about this for years. In fact, our talk on the financial tsunami is about 2 years old, 2 years ago, I believe, in October, when I gave the talk before. And we're talking about, of course, the coming collapse of the world economic system, a great financial tsunami, and we talked about the derivatives and the carry trade and the hedge funds and all the things that were eventually going to lead to the destruction of the current economic system. And so much of what we talked about at that time has come to pass, and the people who heeded our advice, well, at least they're going to weather the storm. And, of course, it was get out of debt and, of course, get into solid assets and get your money out of money and get your wealth out of money into something that's tangible. And then, of course, you get your home paid off, and or if you have to, sell your home and get a cheaper home, because you're never going to see an opportunity in your lifetime to get the amount of money out of property that you saw when, of course, they were just churning money out. What they were doing, of course, they were just creating money out of nothing, and this is what they've been doing. And it was because of the excesses of the monetary system of why we rose to such great financial levels, and, of course, everybody was getting rich, and people were buying houses and then selling the houses and making a profit. People were buying condos before they were finished, and then as soon as they were finished, they were selling them and making $100,000, $200,000. One of my friends purchased a home with nothing down. In fact, they gave him $25,000 to buy the home. Can you imagine that? And he actually held the home for 6 months or so, and it turned around and selling it at a profit, and of course he's renting at the present time. He's a realtor. He understands what's going on, and people have to understand that, of course, we've seen the best days of the phony monetary system. I was reading the newspaper this evening, and of course we were simply thinking about all the various forms that have gone down here in the last 3 or 4 weeks. AIG, American Investment Group, the largest insurer in the world, actually has gone down. In fact, I was reading an advertisement in the Wall Street Journal. It appeared on the 29th of September, just a few days ago, and it was telling us how great AIG was. And, of course, the first sentence of the advertisement, full-page advertisement by AIG. And it says, AIG Commercial Insurance subsidiaries are highly rated and financially secure, with statutory surplus of $26.7 billion in invested assets, including $70 billion. And, of course, it cost $85 billion just to bail them out. They were so far in debt, and simply AIG is no longer a viable company. And this has happened to Lehman Brothers. This has happened to Merrill Lynch. This has happened to go down the list of the Countrywide, to the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and lots of our banks had bought their stock, and the stock for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is now essentially worthless, as are the preferred bonds. Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about what's going on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, we're just talking about some of the companies that have gone down. Washington Mutual has gone down. Wachovia has had to sell itself. And of course, Washington Mutual, I think, was bought by J.P. Morgan Chase. And of course, most of the major investment banks are no longer. Basically, we had two classes of banks. One was the commercial banks. The other was the investment banks. Commercial banks were regulated much more tightly than investment banks. Commercial banks were limited in the amount of fractional reserve they were able to, reserves they were required to hold. Usually they could lend out $8 or $9 on for every dollar they had. Whereas the investment banks could actually loan out $30 or $40 or $50 and only have $1 in reserves. It's called fractional reserve banking. It's a wonderful scam, and it works very well for the banks. Until, of course, the day of reckoning comes and people start taking their money out of the banks, and suddenly they don't have that dollar to back the $30 or $40 or $50 they've lent out. And of course, this is when the whole house of cards begins to come tumbling down, and that's exactly what's happening. Most people don't understand fractional reserve banking. It is one of the greatest scams in the world. It's the means by which banks create money out of nothing and then have the audacity to charge you interest on it. Well, of course, you go down the list of all the major banks. Actually, J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs are no longer investment banks. They've asked to become commercial banks. They're willing to accept the additional regulation so that they can, of course, borrow directly from the Federal Reserve System. And the Federal Reserve is lending money out. I mean, we're talking about tens, hundreds of billions of dollars every week at 2% interest to 2.25% interest. And then the banks have the audacity to charge you 6 or 8 or maybe on commercial deals 10% interest. And, of course, where is the Federal Reserve System getting its money? Federal Reserve System is running out of money. They're having to get it from the Treasury. Where does the Treasury get their money? They don't have any money. They're having to borrow it. They're having to borrow billions of dollars every single day just to pay their bills. And today, of course, fortunately, many, many people are buying Treasury bonds, and they're paying to put their money into Treasury bonds. Why? Because they want something that at least they think is secure, where they're not going to use the value of their money. So they're willing to pay to put their money into T-bills, which they believe has the strength and credit of the United States government behind them. But what happens if the government fails? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We'd like to know what you'd like to talk about tonight. This is Open Lines. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And basically, of course, on Monday, why the House of Representatives, to their credit, turned down Henry Paulson's legislation, which was going to make him an economic dictator of America. It was going to allow him to transfer $700 billion of your tax money to his friends on Wall Street. It was a bailout for Wall Street, the very people who created the problem, and there was nothing there, of course, for the homeowners who are losing their homes. There was nothing there that's going to solve the problem. And, of course, Henry Paulson kept telling us, if you don't pass this bill, why, it's going to be Armageddon. If you don't pass this bill, we're going to fall into the precipice. There's going to be chaos. There's going to be total breakdown of the financial structure of our society. You give me $700 billion. And, of course, I do not want any oversight. No legislative oversight of how I spend the money, who I give the money to, how much we pay for assets for my friends. No court in the land will be allowed to review what I've done. I will be above the law. That's what he said. That's what the legislation said. And then on 60 Minutes, and I had to watch him on 60 Minutes last Sunday, and you can get the script from up on the Internet, or certainly you can actually buy the copy of the interview or the script of the interview. And Henry Paulson had the audacity to say, well, I want oversight. I mean, I don't want to do this on my own. I invite oversight. And yet, if you look at the legislation as he drew it up, he was become an economic dictator. This man is a liar on that very fact alone, as that he wrote one thing out and he put it into the legislation he tried to get through. And then he had the audacity to go on television and look into the camera and stammer. And he did. Here's the man, the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, who is making almost $40 million a year. And gave that up so he could take the job as Secretary of the Treasury at $185,000 a year. Do you really think he did that because, of course, he cares about America? No, he wanted to be able to bail out his friends on Wall Street and, of course, Goldman Sachs to keep them intact. And that's what it was all about. That's why he was put in as Secretary of the Treasury, because they knew the crisis was coming. It was only a matter of time. In fact, I personally believe that they precipitated this crisis intentionally because they want to destroy the stability of our economic system, and they want to wipe out the middle class, and they want to impoverish our people, and they want to destroy the value of our currency. And why would rational people want to do that? Because they want a global currency. And all you have to do is, of course, read the writings that come from the Council on Foreign Relations, which is America's invisible government, and certainly last year in their publication, Foreign Affairs magazine, and if you've ever seen it, of course, their logo is a rider on a white horse. But anyway, of course, their article was talking about the necessity and the advisability of a global currency which would be privately issued, which would be backed by gold. Now, who is going to be able to come up with, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars it would take to create a global currency? Probably it would take a couple of trillion dollars to come up with that much gold to back a global currency. Who do you think has that amount of money? Or the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and their associates, and they've been accumulating the gold, and as the central banks have been selling gold, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds have been accumulating gold, and I believe in preparation for coming up with a global currency, because you're going to have a global government, you have to have a global currency, and I think it's coming, and coming very rapidly. I don't know whether it'll be a matter of months or years or a decade, but I think it's coming, and it won't be long. Well, let's go to Bill, who's in upstate New York. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Well, aside from being steamed up about this big economic mess, I'm doing all right.
All right, fine. Up around Albany, Utica, where about?
Syracuse.
All right, fine. Are you listening to us on the radio, Internet, shortwave?
Shortwave.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, actually, the last couple nights, I've gotten you in pretty good for a long time. I could hardly get you in at all.
Well, of course, that's actually an excellent shortwave station. It's one of the biggest shortwave stations at 250,000 watts, not very many that large, but at least I'm glad we're getting in tonight. So what are your thoughts about what's going on?
Well, basically, as far as I'm concerned, don't do anything. Don't take taxpayers' money. Let these Wall Street fat cats, whatever you want to call them,
I call them banksters.
Well, that's even better.
All right, fine. Well, in other words, they've made bad investments. If you and I make bad investments, we have to pay for it. If they make bad investments, why, they should have to pay for it.
If it means losing their country club memberships, their private jets, their limos, their yachts, their mansions, and whatever else they have, well, too bad. I feel sorry for them.
Well, I agree with you totally, and I think that the worst thing we can do, if we would just simply let the whole thing collapse, the free market would eventually take over. We need to get back to an asset-backed currency so the politicians and the banksters cannot create money out of nothing. We need an asset-backed currency, and that's what, of course, Tom, you read what Thomas Jefferson was talking about back in 1810, 1811, talking about how simply this paper currency was going to eventually lead to a total collapse, and it really did. I mean, 2 years later, the whole system collapsed in 1812. And what did they do? Well, they got us into a war at that time, just like they're going to get us into a war in the very near future. It's only a matter of time before we're at war with the Muslim world. In fact, I just got some emails today that some of the major newspapers in the East are sending out with every edition of at least one edition of the newspaper, a free DVD on the Muslim world and how they hate us, and how they want to kill us, and we got to kill them before they kill us, doing everything they can to create hatred of the Muslims in preparation for the coming war. And that's the underlying tone of so much of what we see on television. The Muslims are just terrible, terrible people. And isn't it interesting? We never heard that before September 11th with that.
Well, I mean, I hate to say this, but my personal opinion, a lot of Muslims are a lot more moral than a lot of Christians are.
Well, I tell you what, I think you're absolutely right. And I think what we have to understand is we don't want, to be put in a position where we're going to have to kill them. And we don't want to give them every reason to want to kill us. And believe me, they're working over within the Muslim world to get them to hate the Christians and the West. They're working within the West to get us to hate the Muslims. That's how you get a war going. And once you understand that, so much of what's going on begins to make sense.
Well, I'll say this much. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm smart enough not to fall for that.
I'm glad you are. Look, I'm sure really, most Americans got a lot more good common sense than a lot of college graduates who are educated beyond their intelligence. And I find so often people with a college degree go right along with the establishment. They never question what they read in Time magazine or Newsweek magazine.
Well, because they'd never get anywhere if they did question it.
Right.
And I live close to Syracuse University, and there's all kinds of foreign students up there. And I'll say this much for them. The Muslims and the Orientals, they're a lot better mannered than a lot of the American ones are.
Amen to that. Well, what we need to do is, of course, try to get back to our fundamentals, try to get back to our belief in God and the fear of God, which was the hallmark of America up until about 50 years ago. And we need to start a schoolroom class, with prayer and make people very aware of the fact that we have to look to God for guidance, because if we look to ourselves, we're going to make mistakes. Anything else you'd like to say, Bill, before we let you go?
I just have to say amen to all that, too. I mean, I see examples of it every day.
Right. Well, what we need to do, of course, is get back to a solid monetary system. We're going to have difficult times, but remember the $700 billion they want is simply the first down payment to the to the blackmailer. And they're saying, oh, if you don't give us the money, things are going to get terrible. What are they going to say when this doesn't work? Well, you're going to have to give us $2 trillion and things are really going to get bad.
Yeah.
Let's put a stop to this now. And, of course, the people who have been involved in criminal activity, and many of them are working for our major banks and for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and turning out fraudulent reports, which is why so many people bought the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac stock, and they're going to lose everything they put in. And, of course,
maybe if there was a provision in that bill that the people responsible for this would be charged and brought to trial and sent to prison, I might change my mind.
I still wouldn't want to give them the $700 billion because it's going to go to the banksters. And they're not going to send the bad guys to prison. It's only the good.
That's
why we've got 2.3 million people in prison today. Why one in every 32 adults in America is either in prison, probation, or parole, because often good people go to prison and the criminal element is out there running our courts. Hey, thanks so much, Bill.
You're welcome. Thank you.
God bless.
Good to hear you again.
Okay. Let's go to Jade, who's calling from West Sacramento. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hey, Jade, how are you doing?
Oh, good. Thank God for internet and I can get in the show. Dr. Sam, I want to know, have they passed in the Senate this rotten piece of legislation? I've heard rumors that they had.
Yes, I think they did. We have the finest senators that money can buy. And you see, they're not up for re-election. They're only up for election every 6 years. So the congressmen are up for a re-election every 2 years, and they're going to be up for re-election, all of them. Every member of Congress is going to be up for a re-election in November of this year. And I think anybody who voted for this ought to be retired, because they get a nice retirement. We wouldn't have to worry about them. We get health care for life and a far better retirement than you're ever going to get. But we can't do that with the senators. Only a third of them come up. And those that come up for election, I've had a lot of them voted against it. Those that are going to be there for two or four more years, they got nothing to lose. And think of all the goodies they're going to get from the people with great wealth for voting their way. Hang on, we'll be right back. Okay, Jane, go right ahead.
Well, aren't they going to strong-arm the House, you think?
Oh, I think they really are. I think they're going to offer these people. They're going to actually bribe them. They're going to have to give them fabulous sums of money so they can get reelected, and let them know that, you know, if they do not go along with the banksters, why, of course, they're going to help their opposition in the coming elections in November. And for those who have a weak character, why, they'll give in. Remember, the vote was 205. Four and 228 against. So they really only have to pull around about 23 senators. In fact, really, they only have to get about 13 or 14 congressmen to go their way, and that would give them a plurality of 13 people switching their vote, and they would be able to get this thing through. So believe me, they'll make them all sorts of offers or threats, or maybe even threaten their family. And believe me, these people are ruthless. We're not dealing with nice people at all. We're dealing with people who will go to any extent because their God is money, and because I really believe they want, of course, to reward the banksters there, people at Goldman Sachs and people at J.P. Morgan and Chase. Let me suggest to you, you know, we have a letter I found. It was among Colonel House's papers back at the Sterling Library at Yale University when I was back there in 1980. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt is writing to Colonel House in, as I remember, October of 1933, and saying, as both you and I know, Colonel, while our government has been owned by special interests in various parts of our country going back to the days of Andrew Jackson, and I'm not excluding W.W., meaning, of course, Woodrow Wilson, who was under House's control. So what President Roosevelt was saying, look, you and I both know that the financial interests have control our nation. And that's what he was the sentence before that he was talking about. He'd had a nice meeting with Jack Morgan. That's, of course, the son of J.P. Morgan. So understand that nothing has changed since 1933. These people control our government. They have used our financial and military power to create an empire, which is why we have, of course, troops stationed in 130 nations. And probably now we have them stationed in 131. We just moved troops into Israel, supposedly to man their anti-ballistic missile system. So now we have troops in 131 nations permanently stationed there, and we have over 700 bases throughout the world where we dominate the world, and we keep corrupt politicians and dictators in power as we move towards the one world government, which is what this is really all about. And, of course, our banksters are going right along with that. And the whole financial system of the whole world is beginning to crumble today, and this will facilitate going into the world government they're planning. So our job is to try to get people to understand what's going on. And I'm not surprised, of course, that they weren't able to buy off the senators who know, who really runs things. They just don't want the public to know. They don't want them to know about the Bilderbergers. That's why we never see it mentioned in the papers. They don't want them to know about the Trilateral Commission. They don't want them to understand that the Council on Foreign Relations, which always provides the Secretary of State and always provides the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency and always provides the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, is a front for a secret society who was created to take over control of the world. And, of course, this is covered in Professor Quigley's book. The last thing they want is for the public to learn the truth. And our job and your job is to help get that information out. And hang on, Jane. We'll be back here in just a moment as we talk to people around the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're talking about, of course, what's happening financially this evening. But we'll talk about whatever you would like. And if you have a question or comment, Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we have Jane calling from West Sacramento here in California. Jane, did you have anything else you'd like to say?
Well, so they should be back in session tomorrow, right? So we should see some more of this circus.
Yes, but the thing is, of course, the legislation passed the Senate. We do not know how they voted, but I dare say that those people are not up for re-election, voted with the banksters, and people are up for re-election fearing that the fury of the people went along with what was logical, because the last thing the senators and the congressmen want is for their constituents to know how they vote. And that's what the McCain-Feingold bill was all about, was to keep the public from knowing how the congressman voted. Well, fortunately, we have the Internet. My congressman, supposedly a liberal Democrat, went right along with the banksters, and because he even flies the United Nations flag at his office rather than the American flag. So we know where he's coming from. His name is Sam Farr, if anybody out there doesn't know him. But people, if you're out there, call your congressman, email your congressman, fax your congressman tomorrow, and try to bring this back on Friday, with all the arm twisting and all the bribery. Call them and tell them you're going to remember in November how they voted. And it's so vitally important that people keep after their elected representatives and tell them you're going to let everybody know how they voted. This is the most important piece of legislation that's come up in a long time, because what it does is simply turns over control of our economic system to Mr. Hank Paulson, who is a representative of the invisible government, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, formerly CEO of Goldman Sachs. And believe me, that $700 billion is just simply the first down payment to the blackmailer. And there'll be more and more and more until, of course, they've destroyed our economic system. And the rich will get richer, the middle class will be wiped out, and do not give them the money. And just please, Jane, call your congressman or email your congressman or fax your congressman and encourage all of your friends to do it. We've got to keep the pressure up, because the vote is going to be taken again on Friday, and it's vitally important that the American people understand this.
Well, that's Friday or tomorrow?
Right. Tomorrow's Thursday, and the vote will be on Friday. So basically, remember, this is not for Main Street. This is for Wall Street. And when you hear Henry Paulson saying, why, this is for Main Street, this is for the people. Remember, he's the same man who was on 60 Minutes on the weekend saying, I want oversight. I don't want any response. I mean, I want Congress to look over my shoulder. But look at the legislation. And that man is frankly lying.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Jane?
I appreciate that. No, that was it. Thanks very much.
Okay, God bless. And let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about what is happening, and maybe you think that we ought to. Actually, somebody had sent me an email saying, look, if we don't, we have to pass this legislation sooner or later. Why not do it sooner than later? And I would say, why should we pay the blackmailer? Why should we pay the people who created this problem? Do you think the people who created the problem can solve the problem? They don't want a solution. They want the problem to continue. They want to rape and take the money away from the little guy and give it to the big guy. But ultimately, they want to destroy our economic system. This thing is done intentionally. And one evening, I'll tell you exactly, step by step, how they did it. So I tell the phone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Jack, how are you doing tonight?
Very well, thank you. Order out of chaos, right?
Right.
Well,
they're producing the chaos, and they're not going to bring order because, of course, what they want is the chaos so that they can destroy our economy and destroy our currency. And then, of course, the solution will be a global currency and a global government. That's what it's all about. And, of course, the destruction of Christianity. That's why they've infiltrated our church. That's why, of course, they've infiltrated our seminaries. This is why so many people are confused about what's going on in Christianity today. This is why, of course, we have all this effort on an emerging church, and we're going to have this new Christianity, this Christian mysticism, where we look inside to get answers to the problems of life. and they're really out to destroy Christianity. Once you understand that, so much of what's going on makes sense. And they also want to destroy our economic system. Jack, you hang on there while we'll be with you in just a moment. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Destroy our religious beliefs, destroy our economy, destroy the moral fabric of our society. They're doing a great job, don't you think? We'll be right back in just a moment. All right, Jack, right ahead.
Okay, since the Skull and Bones Yale cheerleader president that I refer to as Bush Laden intimately blamed the American mortgagee for this banking or monetary debacle, I decided to focus on the substance of that, which, of course, would be the mortgage. And as it says in the 14th Amendment, Dr. Stan, Section 4, the validity of the public debt, blah, blah, shall not be questioned. So in pondering that and doing a little research, I came upon the fact that in Corpus Juris Secundum, one of the statutory code books, code meaning a secret language, if you will. It says, Section 1785, the United States government is a foreign corporation with respect to a state.
Jack, what's your point? Because you get off on all of these things which most people can't understand.
Okay,
what was the
what
point you're trying
with
to make?
You, Dr. Stan, is a corporation, whether it's federal, state, or
local. Where does it say it's a corporation?
Corpus.
Where in the Constitution does it say we're a corporation?
Well, it doesn't say in their charter, the Constitution.
No, it really doesn't say. And sure,
that they
all sorts of people
have to understand the terms.
I see, but you have to understand that we are governed by the Constitution. That is the foundation
right.
of our
well,
law.
Well, let me put it to you. Article 1, Section 8, I think it's Clause 5, it says to borrow money on the full credit of the United States, right?
Well, what specific are you talking about? Which one of the clauses there in Article 1, Section 8?
Okay, let me grab my little book here. Yep, all right. Article 1, Section 8, that would be Clause 2, I'm sorry, to borrow money on the credit of the United States.
All right, fine. So what does that have to do with
that? We go down to Clause 5, to coin money, regulate the value thereof. It doesn't tell you there that the coin as money is gold and silver. You have to go to Article 1, Section 10 to read that.
All right, fine. What's the point?
So this charter, this Constitution, seems to be highly deceptive. Because
No, I don't think it's highly deceptive. I think it's the finest document that's ever been written by mankind. But the thing, Jack, what you're trying to do, of course, is come up and confuse the people.
I'm trying to explain. All right, let me get to the point.
What's the point?
The point, the mortgage. Mortgage, here's how it works. You are very good at saying they create so-called money out of thin air. Okay.
Well, our guest is Jack from Michigan. Jack, just go ahead. Make your point,
okay.
Please.
So you say that banks create money out of thin air, right?
Right.
Okay. What is the process by which they do that?
By the fractional reserve banking system, which, of course, is totally fraudulent.
Okay.
And, of course, because we got away from what it says in the Constitution, which is very direct and very positive. It says everything should be based upon gold and silver. Our coinage should be based upon gold and silver. Our currency is based upon gold and silver. So you can't create artificial money out of nothing, which is what the Federal Reserve does. What's the point?
Point is, in the statutory code since 1933, when FDR declared bankruptcy by executive order April 5th, 1933, and then Congress backed it up with H.J.R. 192, that was June of 33, when they agreed to...
Well, okay, what's the point?
Okay, the point is, at that point, the Uniform Commercial Code kicked in. We were all made indentured slave servants.
I see. Oh, we're also indentured slave servants. Thanks so much for calling, Jack. Of course, Jack believes we're all indentured slave servants legally, and I don't believe that at all. I believe we're still covered by the Constitution. And but let's go to James, who calling us from New York. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. James, thanks very much for calling. Are you upstate New York? What part of New York are you from?
I'm near Corning, New York, about 10 miles from Corning.
All right, fine.
This thing has me talking to myself, but I the way I see this thing is paying these guys off is like giving Jesse James a bonus for robbing a bank.
I think that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the guys who've created the problem. We're going to look to them to solve it.
Yeah, well, they're the ones that made all the money on the thing,
right.
And now we're going to give them some more.
Right. And, of course, but what this is going to do is literally wipe out the middle class of this country and impoverish our people. They're going to destroy the value of their savings, of their lifetime of work, of their insurance policies, of their pensions, of their annuities, of their, you know, their bonds, because bonds become certificates of guaranteed confiscation. People think they're secure. They're only secure when the monetary system is secure. And we do not have a secure monetary system. We have one that's crumbling before us.
Yes, this what they're doing here is not going to make things better. It's going to make things worse.
Right.
If they think they've seen something in that stock market, wait till they see the stock market a day or two after they pull this off.
Well, I mean, they may very well get things that are working for a week or 2 weeks. Remember, they manipulate the stock market. If you have access to the Internet, just go up and look under the Working Group on Financial Markets. That's the Working
Group
on Financial Markets, the Plunge Protection Team, which has the right to manipulate the stock market. They manipulated it down 777 points on Monday to punish us. Punish us because Congress didn't go along with what they wanted, and now they, of course, got this thing through the Senate. But, you know, they can do whatever they want to with the stock market and with commodities. We do not have a free market. We have a control market, controlled by the people from the Working Group on Financial Markets, created under the Reagan administration to prevent excess gyration in the stock markets and panic. And yet they create panic. They create elation. They control how we think by whether the market goes up and everything's fine. Gee, we feel good. And
unfortunately, most people have absolutely no knowledge at all about finances, none whatever.
Well, and that's why we hope people listen to our programs and get other people listening to the programs.
Right. Good thing. I can't believe the fact that there is virtually no silver and very little gold available, and yet the price stays down.
Because, you see, you're looking at it logically. When you understand it's all manipulated, of course, they lower the price of silver and there's no silver available, and they say, well, this is supply and demand. No, there is a demand for silver, and the price doesn't go up because they're artificially holding it down. And they do that by simply shorting the market. And you know who the biggest culprit in the United States is? It is Goldman Sachs. It's Henry Paulson's company, the major shorter of gold and silver here in the United States on the commodity exchange.
Well, they have so many derivatives, and there are so many short sales right now. I mean, stopping them now is kind of like after the horse is out of the barn, because I would wager that on many issues there are more shorts than there are shares of stock.
And so, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, it was very interesting that recently the SEC, Chris Cox of the SEC, outlawed negative shorts stocks, except for hedge funds. His buddies in the hedge funds can short, but you and I can't. Now, that's what's known as a free market.
I think the hedge
funds. I mean, that's free for the people who want to exploit it, and you and I can't get in on the fun.
No. Those hedge funds are they're causing a lot of this trouble.
Anyway. Well, the only good thing is that most of them are going belly up. In fact, most of them are losing money this year. Most of us people demanding their money back are simply going to close their doors. Really, hundreds of hedge funds have had to close down. I just wish it closed down all of them because they were making 30 or 40% a year profit on these. And it was their CEOs of these hedge funds were taking, you know, a third of the profit and putting it in their pockets. I mean, these people were making hundreds of millions of dollars every year out of the system. And now, of course, it's turned against them. Why, of course, they're moaning and groaning, and they're even talking about the government trying to help them, too. And I'm sure a lot of them are good friends of Henry Paulson.
Oh, sure.
Anything else you wanted to say, Jay?
No, Stan, it's nice talking to you. I appreciate you taking my call.
God bless, and please encourage others back there in New York to listen to our programs,
I try to encourage them. At least our congressman voted against the bill. I don't know if you'll have the guts to hang out the next time around.
Well, send him an email or call his office tomorrow and tell him you really appreciate what he did, and you hope he'll have the courage to do what's right, because if not, he's coming up for election in November, and you're going to remember how he votes in November.
He's in trouble, too.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye. Let's go to Fred calling from Michigan. Hi, Fred.
Hey, good evening, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Doing well.
What part of Michigan are you calling from?
Flint.
All right, fine. So you're listening to our radio station there. Good.
Yep, WSNL.
Right. They have a good job for us.
They are a fantastic station. I've just got one comment and one question.
All right.
The comment is if we sign in this bailout, what's the worst thing that could happen? I think that obviously it may do a little. If we sign in this bailout, it will bring in some serious havoc financially for just about everybody.
Well, see, the question is, where is the $720 billion going to come from?
That was in my pocket.
Right. They're just going to have to. See, they don't have the money. So
right.
They're going to have to either create the money out of nothing or borrow it. And nobody wants to lend money to the Treasury right now.
Right.
Other countries.
And as you know, the government cannot give anything that they don't first steal from us in the way of taxes.
Right. Well, no, because they can actually borrow money. See, there are three ways to create money. One is
even if they're borrowing money, they have to take it from us to pay it back.
Well, they don't ever intend to pay the debt. That's the whole scam here. There is no way we could ever pay off the debt that we have. So they don't intend to pay off the debt. What they intend to do is take us into a war and destroy the debt, and then you start with the slate all over again.
Yeah.
And you destroy the value of the currency. And then, of course, anybody who's is not in fixed assets is wiped out. But, of course, we could always blame the war on the wicked Osama bin Laden, who incidentally has been dead for several years, but that doesn't matter. We still have him as our favorite enemy.
Yeah.
So
the question is that they're throwing out this $700 or $800 billion that they're wanting to do a bailout with. What is the average loss per person who has money in the stock market that's included in this $700 billion? I would imagine that the average person has no more than about $10,000, $15,000 invested. You know, overall, all the investors included. You know, because a lot of people who have money invested into the stock market, into all sorts of funds, the average person has less than $10,000 invested.
Well, I don't think the average person really is in the stock market now. I think they're in it through their pension funds, and of course, their pension funds are invested in the stock market.
Well, what I mean by the average person is I'm not talking about the average person of all of America. I'm talking about the average person in that group of people.
Well, I think, first of all, anybody who's listened to our program, I hope they got out of the stock market a long time ago, because that's...
Amen to that.
And, of course, but right now, of course, certainly it's the hedge funds, it's the big investors who are in the stock market thinking they're going to make a killing, and these smartest people in the world are working in the hedge funds, and they're losing money. And
yeah,
they're losing so much money that a lot of them are just closing down. So the little guy is not investing or trying to play the stock market. It's only the big boys right at the present time, and they're in real trouble. Many of them are. And a lot of the banks, for instance, were holding the stock in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I mean, it'd be great. You're getting a good return on it. You know, the stock was going up, and suddenly this thing turned against them. And a lot of our small banks... You know, maybe they weren't holding a lot of toxic garbage and faulty loans, but they were holding stock, and that stock isn't worth anything now. The stock of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has totally been wiped out. You're probably talking wiping out close to $1 trillion of the holdings of some of our smaller banks. So a lot of our smaller banks are going to be in trouble before this is all over.
True.
And so we are at a pivotal point in our nation's history. And as Congressman Ron Paul said, and I think it's very true, when we get through this, we will either get back to an asset-backed form of banking and currency, or we'll live in a totalitarian dictatorship. It's going to be one or the other. There's no middle point. The
yeah.
whole system is coming apart.
Yeah, I agree. I've got just one more real quick question for you.
Go right ahead.
It has to do with the election.
Right.
Do you agree that it's time to break the two-party system? And I'm gonna hang up and just listen to you on that. But personally, I'm writing in Ron Paul.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank
all right,
you. Have a great night.
Bye-bye. And first of all, our guest was actually asking about, you know, will this break the two-party system? I don't know. But I do hope at least people are going to begin to understand that both candidates, both Obama and McCain, are run by the Council on Foreign Relations, the people who control them. And the Council on Foreign Relations is a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891. If you want to verify that, read the book by the most eminent historian of the last century, which was suppressed for many years. We have it, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And they there on pages 1247 and 1248, Professor Quigley talks about how we need two political parties that are really essentially the same, but we give the impression that they're different so that people can go to the polls every 4 years and throw the scoundrels out, but nothing will change. And then he goes on to talk about how the real effort, of course, is put into the nominating convention, where, of course, they determine who the Republican candidate's going to be Democrat candidate, and that's exactly what they did. And both of these candidates are controlled by exactly the same people. And it's not going to make a dime's worth of difference who gets in. Everybody's going to think it's going to make a bit of difference, but the president does what he's told. The most powerful man in the country is the chairman of the Federal Reserve System and, of course, the Secretary of the Treasury. And the president, George Bush, does exactly what Bernanke and Paulson tell him to. That's why he backed their bill. And the vast majority of Republican congressmen voted against the president and voted against the powerful people. That's why they punished us on Monday by letting and forcing the market down 777 points. Anyway, let's go to Anthony giving us a call. But anyway, what we need to do is do away with the two-party system. But I would love to see Ron Paul or the president, but I'm not going to vote for him. I'm not going to write his name in. I'm going to vote for somebody who stands for Ron Paul's principles, whose name is going to appear on the ballot. And what we need to do is do away with the two-party system and get a second party. What we have is a one-party system with two branches. What we need is a second political party so the people can be heard. Anthony, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing fine. You're out there in Wyoming, huh?
Yeah, I'm in Wyoming now. I listened to you first, I think. Were you on KPFA about 10 years ago? Was that KFRE? Which one were you on?
I'm really not sure. Basically, we did a program out of Modesto on 770. Yeah, that was on KCBC. You were in Daly City, so that's how you probably heard it.
Daly City. I was listening to you. I had a half-hour program. I think it was on a Saturday or Sunday.
Yep, that's right. It was on a Sunday. That was KCBC at 770 a.m. We're still there.
Yeah, And, you know, nobody puts it better than you, and I'll say the man's name. I'm going to vote for Chuck Baldwin of the Constitution Party because he's the only man, like you say, that's going to be on the ballot that can win if we rally around him. And what we need to do is get the people off their couch that are not registered to vote. We need to wake them up and let them know, because a lot of people that are discontent with what's going on in our government today, they're not even registered to vote.
Well, they ought to be, and of course, I think that your idea of voting for a man of principle is what it's all about. I don't want to vote for the lesser of the two evils. I'd rather lose the election voting for a man of principle than have either McCain or Obama in.
I've been saying that for years, but it's amazing how these people, when I talk to them through email and stuff, they're so asleep that they just tout the party line. They go along with the lesser of two evils, and it's just not... You know, that no matter what you say, they treat you like you're an outcast.
I'll tell you what, you know, a lot of people have probably been laughing at you in the past and thinking you're crazy, but right now an awful lot of them are wondering, maybe you're not crazy. They're afraid you're not crazy. Just hang in there. Our job is to get the word out. It's God's job
to make
them listen.
And Dr. Stan, I want you to know I'm working at getting your word out, about getting your show out. I'm making... CDs of your MP3 files, which you say we can pass around.
You sure can.
And I'm sending them around to people. And if you come around, if it comes around the backside where you hear of Clarion Call for USA, that's my project.
All right, God bless and thanks very much. Hey, thanks. We'll talk to you later. And let's go right now to Anthony calling from Wyoming. Hi, Anthony. How are you doing? Anthony, are you there? Well, I guess wait a minute now. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Chris from Chris from Palmer, Idaho. Is that Chris?
Yeah, that's me.
All right, you go right ahead. I have a quick question.
Well, I just had a comment.
Oh, go right ahead.
I don't know if I ever told you that.
Hold just a moment. We're going to have to go to the break here, but we'll be back with you in just a moment when we get through. Chris, go right ahead.
I just wanted to let you know that 2.5 years ago, my son and I had an opportunity. We went to India, and we had a East Indian guide, and he was an American citizen also. But what a fantastic thing that was to learn what was really going on. And it's just like you said, our government has got us so brainwashed. The American people have no idea what's going on around the world.
But we have the Internet. Of course, we have shortwave. We have the opportunity to reach people we never did before. We have a lot of great videos out there. We got YouTube, and Sydney, we're posting a lot of YouTube up on our Internet, ones I think are important. And people can go there and watch them. Please go to RadioLiberty.com, scroll down to other videos, and start watching those 2 or 3 minute YouTubes. They'll give you a lot of education. So we've got a lot to be thankful for, Chris. Never before in the 46 years I've been involved have I been as optimistic as I am today. And I mean that sincerely. I believe we're in real trouble. We may lose America. We may lose our lives, but we also may wake up an awful lot of people.
Well, I hope so. I just wonder how many people that do sit in church, if they were faced with the fact that they either had to admit that there was a God and he was Jesus Christ, or are they going to really deny it and take the safe road? I pray myself that the day that happens that I'm going to fess up and not be like Peter. That's just something that nobody will really know until it does happen. But
well, I think
I pray about it all the time.
Well, we're in a spiritual battle, and that's, of course, the message we got to get out. Hey, thanks very much for calling. And let's go to Al calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Al. Do you have a quick question?
Yes, I do, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I was wondering, I've always wanted to know who we owe the debt to, the national debt. I know the Federal Reserve's fraudulent.
No, well, basically, Chris, I got to tell you, we owe it to ourselves, which is really not true. Right now, of course, the Chinese control a third of the treasury bonds that are issued against our debt, and of course, the Japanese control probably 20%. We owe most of it to foreign countries, and of course, to foreign countries. The Russians hold a lot. The Germans hold a lot. It's interesting that the countries where we have our troops stationed have bought a lot of our treasury bonds. I wonder why. And, of course, they're part of the empire. That's why it's all about. But one of these days they may turn against us, and if they do, heaven help us, because if the Chinese were to cash in their bonds tomorrow, our whole monetary system would collapse. And, of course, we would destroy our currency. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and, of course, Al was just calling, and of course, he was asking, who do we owe the money to? We have a national debt. Who do we owe it to? Well, they always want to tell us we owe it to ourselves, and that's really not true. The Chinese today hold almost $1 trillion in American currency, and they owe 30% of the treasury bonds that are issued as backing our debt. And, of course, the Japanese, about 20%, and the rest of it is held by the Russians and the Germans and other people throughout the world. So we owe, I think there's probably $3.5 trillion of debt that we owe to foreigners, and they're trying to get rid of it as rapid as they can. They're buying up the Pennsylvania Turnpike, the New Jersey Turnpike, the Chicago Skyway. They're buying up our factories. They're buying up our stocks. And, of course, they're buying up farm property all across America. And pretty soon, America's going to be owned by foreign people. And they're still going to have trillions of dollars of our money. And when they unload that, the whole system comes down. Hey, we're out of time, Al, but God bless you. Thanks for listening, and encourage others out there in Santa Cruz to listen, will you?
You got it. God bless you.
Okay, fine. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is still primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there across America and you believe in what we're doing and what we're trying to do, and as you know, we have a satellite uplink, and you can listen to that 9 hours a day. Inexpensive, doesn't cost anything to listen once you have your dish and receiver. You need more information, go to our website, and they'll tell you who can help you put in that satellite system. We're on shortwave 3 hours a day. We're on the Internet 5 hours a day. We're certainly on radio stations all across America, probably 50 radio stations. But we have to pay for most of these. It's an expensive proposition. But, of course, I'm doing this because I believe we have to get the word out. If you want to be part of our team, or you can be part of our team, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And if you're one of the people, so many people are really hurting today and can't help monetarily, you can certainly help by telling other people about our program, about our Internet, because go to RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs. You can watch our DVDs. You can watch our YouTube postings. You can read our newsletters. And, of course, you can help us get the word out. You have my permission to copy and simply distribute anything we have produced, as long as you're not making a profit on it, just getting back the cost of your production. We'll appreciate the help. And then, of course, I need to remind you, of course, that we are going to be having our all-day seminar here in the North Shore of Monterey Bay at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be on the 26th of October. We're bringing in Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's going to talk on health. We're bringing in Joanna Michelson, who's going to talk on the supernatural, because Joanna was a medium and in touch with the beings, the supernatural beings from the other dimensions. She saw all sorts of miracles, real, honest-to-goodness miracles. But, of course, they were all inspired by demons. And the people, when she went back and checked them later, people who had been healed from cancer and they were demonically possessed. Understand that we are involved in a true spiritual battle. We're going to have certainly Patrick Wood. He's going to be talking about finances, and of course Michael Shaw will be there. You're going to have your reservations because we're serving lunch. It's going to start at 8 o'clock in the morning, or we'll open the doors at 8 o'clock and go till 5 or 5:30. I think it'll be an unforgettable experience. We've had people come back year after year. They're coming from all across the country, and if you can come, well, I would love to have you. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. How do you really understand what's going on in America today? Well, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or watch the DVD, And, of course, if you can't afford it, go up on the Internet and go to RadioLiberty.com and go to our DVDs. You can watch the DVD there and get the message. And, but, of course, the book, which is inexpensive, but it does give you the information and the documentation where you can go and read what these people talk about the God that they worship, because they worship a different God. And then, of course, you need to get our talk on the Forbidden Secret or the Secret Knowledge, our talk on the planned police state and the documentation for those things. And of course, Bobby from Spokane says it sounds like another Panama Canal giveaway, and I think that's pretty true. They're giving away America because they hate America, because they worship a different God. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing us the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be those of our friend Mike Schuler. And Mike is going to be talking about the 110-page a piece of legislation that was up for consideration on Monday. Now, you have to understand that you didn't let the congressman see this until immediately before the vote, and there was another a couple of hundred of pages to explain what the 110 pages said. Basically, well, this all started when Henry Paulson presented a three-page document, and he said that this was going to be what he wanted to save us from the abyss, to save us from the precipice, to save us from financial Armageddon, and basically it said that he was going to have sole power to determine what to do with the $720 billion that nobody, of course, would be able to question what he did. There would be no legislative oversight. There would be no judicial oversight. That basically, he would be able to buy assets at whatever price he wanted. He would be able to determine, of course, which assets he was going to buy. None of this was going to help homeowners. It was always going to help his friends on Wall Street. He kept saying, this is for Main Street. This is to help Main Street. It's not going to keep people from losing their homes at all. It was to help Wall Street so they could make up for all their bad investments. Well, suddenly that three-page document became 110 pages, and I don't have time to read it, but Mike did, and so fortunately he's read it a couple of times. Mike, tell us what is in the document that the House of Representatives voted down on Monday, and why this was so dangerous.
Well, Stan, it's a wonderful life, isn't it?
It sure is. But we are privileged to be living in it at the present time and to know the Lord, because that's all that makes it possible.
Yeah. I'm very unhappy these days because I had to read this thing twice, basically. They put up one version last Sunday night, which was really, it said in the title, Up for Discussion, was basically what it said. And then Monday morning, there was a revised edition, and a version, which the lawmakers were supposed to vote on, and there's no way in the world, since the Congress started at 8 o'clock that morning, there's no way in the world for them to have actually read it to see what it said in comparison with whatever they knew it was supposed to have said over the weekend.
But you see, Mike, that's the way things work. They really don't care about Congress. They're simply there as a window dressing for the power elite, the Nancy Pelosi's, the people who lead the Republican Party, the people who lead the Democrat Party, and the congressmen are told, you can trust us. I mean, we're your leaders. And so Nancy Pelosi, of course, was the major cheerleader for George Bush's bailout. I mean, why would Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat Speaker of the House, be backing George Bush? Because they're all in this together. And once you understand that, we have two of the finest political parties that money could buy, and Nancy Pelosi went right along with that. She's been involved in all sorts of dishonest activities, funneling money to her husband out of the political campaign funds that she has. But she says, well, it's perfectly legal. She's got to go along with what they tell her, or they'll put her in prison. That's the way it is. She's given her husband over $100,000 a year of political contributions for a work done for her political campaign. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to point out that what I wanted to discuss tonight was the bill that failed.
All right, fine. Well, that's what we want to hear about.
Yeah.
Hold on. We're going to have to take a break here in just a moment. And then Mike's got to go over the 110-page of legislation that, fortunately, Congress voted down on Monday. But I'm sure they're going to try to bring it back on Friday with a few changes in it, and, of course, having bribed a number of our congressmen. Mike, go right ahead.
Yeah, well, that's actually tomorrow morning, I believe, they're going to vote.
All right, tomorrow. Okay, go ahead.
And I don't know how the vote came out today in the Senate.
It came out. I don't know what the numbers were, but the Senate did pass the legislation.
Yeah, and they were expected to. Hold on a second here. Dogs barking. Who knows what the bill is going to say tomorrow? But I don't really expect it's going to change too much. One reason that I believe it's good to go through the bill that failed is because it reveals what they want,
right.
And it's what they will get eventually, whether it takes them another year or another five or another century. They've been working on this 95 years now since the Federal Reserve itself came into existence, and they hacked away at it for a century prior to that. And by that, what I'm referring to is the bankers, and I use that as a broad term to describe those who are have been conspiring really all these years to gain ascendancy over nations by financial power, commonly known as fascism. We could call it 200 years now that they've been working on this to get to this point. And I'd like to bring up again the quote that we've all been hearing so often lately by Anselm Rothschild, one of the most powerful European bankers of old, not so old. He said, give me the power to issue a nation's currency, then I do not care who makes the laws. And this is where we've really arrived now with this bill. I believe completely that they're going to get what they want. They always get what they want because they never quit. And one observation that I'm personally making in this, experts can certainly debate me, but time will tell. Let me see if I can just get this through clearly. It's a little tricky, but it's only a sentence. The power that was given to the Federal Reserve back in 1913 was really the power of the Congress to control the currency, to determine the valuation of the money, and to coin money, regulate the value thereof. It says in Article 1, Section 8. The congressional power was very improperly given to the Federal Reserve, by statute, but given to this private power, the governors, the group, they didn't call themselves governors exactly right then, but it was a private interest that took over that power from Congress. And now, at least in part,
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Mike Short. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, of course, for this hour is Mike Schuller, who's read the 110-page piece of legislation that was suddenly presented to Congress after they'd gone into session on Monday morning. And, of course, they didn't have a chance to read what they were going to vote on. And, of course, fortunately, the Republicans, with the help of 95 Democrats across the line, voted the legislation down. The legislation they were told to vote on, even though they hadn't read it or analyzed it and weren't allowed to even discuss it or even know what was in it, because they changed it from the previous evening to that morning and then after they were in session. Now suddenly there's a new piece of legislation presented, and fortunately it was voted down. So basically Mike says that this is simply the culmination of a 100-year plan to put the financial interests in control of our country. And you have to understand, this was the original battle that went on during the early days of our country, a battle between Alexander Hamilton, who represented the financial interests of Great Britain, who wanted to control this new fledgling republic over here, and Thomas Jefferson, who did not want to, and Thomas Jefferson did not want a central bank, but Hamilton persuaded George Washington to go along with it, so they created the first bank of the United States. And of course its charter was to they created in 1791. The charter was to actually expire in 1811, 20 years later. And of course when it came up for vote, it was voted down, and they did not review the charter, because of course the bank, the central bank of the United States, the first central bank, was controlled at least a third by European interests who were dictating policy here. Well, of course then they immediately precipitated the War of 1812 the following year, and by 1815 our country was in total economic turmoil, and so they established the second bank of the United States in 1816, and that of course charter was to last until 20 years, until 1836. But Nicholas Biddle, chairman of the Second Bank of the United States, figured he would just force this issue in 1832 on Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson, like most presidents, would simply now knuckle under the power of the financial elite. And again, this bank was at least a third controlled by European interests, who were controlling the stock in this bank. It wasn't an American bank. It was controlled by the European banksters. And, of course, Andrew Jackson took a stand. He said to the American people, it's either the bank and no Andrew Jackson, or it will be Andrew Jackson and no central bank. They tried to kill him on a couple of occasions. Most of the members of his cabinet were bought off. Certainly, the leaders of both the Senate and the Congress were bought off by the banksters. But Andrew Jackson was a man of integrity and stuck to his principles. And when it came to the president's election, the people overwhelmingly voted for him because they didn't want the central bankers of Europe controlling the United States. And of course, then, of course, that was the end of the Second Bank of the United States. But of course, they've been working ever since then. And of course, they got the Third Bank of the United States, Central Bank, in 1913 with the Federal Reserve, which is a privately owned central bank. All of the banks have been privately owned, and of course, strongly influenced by the alliances with Europe. And that's where we are today. Here we are, of course, 80-some years later, and of course, the same people are doing exactly the same things, because they're powerful spiritual forces behind this whole movement towards centralized banking. And if you don't believe that, you need to get the little pamphlet that the Luciferians wrote. It's called The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. We offer it to you, put out by the Lucis Trust. TheLuciusTrust.org. Go to their website. They no longer list this, of course, publication, because we've been talking about it, but they want it distributed, so we're distributing it. We'll be glad to get you a copy if you get something else from it. Just ask for the Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy, and they will tell you they have their people planted within the financial systems, within the governments, within the education, within the clergy. Oh, yes, they've got their people planted within the clergy. People who worship a different God. But Mike, tell us, what is in this legislation you're talking about?
Well, one reason I wanted to get into some of the detail is because it's simply not being given in the news media. The commentators are all going back and forth. You know, the whole thing is a Republican problem, and they say the whole thing is a Democrat problem. And they're both wrong, because this goes to the Federal Reserve. This goes to the financial management. It's the whole credit system that's been established in the fractional reserve system. Federal Reserve System really should be called the Fractional Reserve System. But I was giving this a little bit of an overview before the break that I'll just reiterate for those who were not in the program at the time. The power that was given to the Fed back in 1913 by the Congress is, in a significant sense, or in part, coming back under the government. Instead of to the Congress, it's coming to the executive branch, to the presidency by way of the Treasury, which is under the executive branch. And I think that's profound because it creates a bit more of a dictatorship. One more piece of the picture of dictator is it has now come into view.
So I think what's the point you're making out, of course, according to our Constitution, it was the Congress, of course, who was going to control the monetary system and the coinage and mintage of our currency. But, of course, it's very hard to control, 435 congressmen or something like that. It's much easier to control one president like George Bush, who is really a puppet. He's controlled by Dick Cheney. He's controlled by Mr. Bernanke. He's controlled by Mr. Paulson. George Bush is not a dynamic leader. He's a figurehead for the elite. And so they would far rather, of course, be able to control one president than have to try to control 435 rambunctious congressmen. I think it's a good point, Mike.
Now, I'd like to get into the text. I've got about a dozen different points we can get into if there's enough time, and I'll try and go quickly. I hope this isn't boring. It shouldn't be. If it is, just go do something else. But this is what's happening to your country. This right here, right now, this 110 pages, and or whatever it's going to look like tomorrow, is not going to be much different, as I was saying before. The purposes of the act are defined right up front to immediately provide authority and facilities that the Secretary of the Treasury can use to restore liquidity and stability to the financial system of the United States. Now, I'm a free market kind of a guy. I really believe in free market. We don't need, I don't know if I can say total laissez-faire, but if we just left it up to state and federal government to prosecute the criminals that might screw things up in a free market scenario, then the free market has a way of really taking care of itself. By competition and economic force of the consumer. So anyhow, I don't want to dwell too much on that. Number two, under purposes, to ensure that such authority and facilities are used in such a manner that it protects home values, college funds, retirement accounts, life savings, preserves home ownership, promotes jobs and economic growth, maximizes overall returns to the taxpayers of the United States.
Well, it sounds really great, Mike, but of course there's nothing in that that says that he's going to actually protect it. He says it's nice we can do these things, but there is nothing there that says he is going to protect the homeowners. It says that it'd be great to do it, but how are they going to protect the homeowners?
Yeah, well, big question. How in the world can we lay all this at the feet of the Secretary of the Treasury?
He becomes an economic dictator of America. This does away with our whole idea of checks and balances. Certainly there is no oversight. There is no judicial oversight or court oversight or legislative oversight. We are declaring an economic dictator, aren't we, really?
Yeah. Now, most listeners tonight have kids. Now, what are you going to do? How do you protect your kids? We're talking about protection. We're talking about the Secretary of the Treasury protecting everything. Well, how do you protect your kids? You control them. How is the Secretary of the Treasury going to protect anything? Whatever the government protects, whatever the UN protects, they have to control. We're giving control to these people that they shouldn't have. They don't need it. We don't need them to have it. And if we're not willing to dig into the text of this type of legislation, or actually all legislation, then they are going to roll on the way they have been, and they're going to suck the life out of this country. Now, that was the stated purposes. I want to move to the board members are completely suspect. All the usual suspects, as a matter of fact. Let me flip my pages here. The oversight board here, the membership of the, they call it the Financial Stability Oversight Board, shall be comprised of, excuse me, clear my throat, chairman of the board of governors of the Federal Reserve System, number one.
That's Bernanke, of course.
Well, whoever. For now. Well, do we want him in this? And number two is the Secretary of the Treasury, of course. Number three, the Director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Number four, the Chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And number five, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
Sounds very much like the same people on the Plunge Protection Team. At least three of them are the four members of the Plunge Protection Team. Go ahead.
Yeah. We could say here again, the fox isn't just in the house, in the hen house. It built the hen house. Now it's renovating the hen house and making room additions. And there ain't nobody here but us chickens. Backing up, what did I skip? You'll have to excuse me a little bit. I'm going to get this right, and I'm going to flip my pages. The authority of the secretary. The secretary is authorized to take such actions as the secretary deems necessary to carry out the authorities in this act, including without limitation the following. The secretary shall have direct hiring authority, entering into contracts, designating financial institutions as financial agents of the federal government. This is one that really gets me. And I spoke about this on an earlier program last week. These institutions shall perform all such reasonable duties related to this act as financial agents of the federal government as may be required. So, and it sounds to me like the Secretary of the Treasury can call on any of his buddies down there in downtown Manhattan to come along with him and become financial agents of the federal government.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead.
Okay. What if he decided Goldman Sachs ought to come on board with him?
He's actually bringing people from Goldman Sachs in to be with him. Of course, this is one of the largest financial institutions in the world. Has done such a good job that they actually have recently requested they no longer be considered an investment bank.
Yeah.
They want to bring themselves under the control of the government. Why? Because their man is the one who's running the government, of course. Go right ahead.
Yeah, but see, he also, as you've said before, came from Goldman Sachs, but it's not, this is more than just the individuals. You know, they can play musical chairs and they can give up their big gazillion-dollar salaries for their meager government pay, but this is talking about the whole institution, bringing in the whole institution. They give a definition for financial institutions. The term financial institution means any institution, including but not limited to any bank, savings association, credit union, security broker or dealer, or insurance company established and regulated under the laws of the United States or any state, territory, or possession of the United States, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Mariana Islands, Guam, the whole list. Anything. I'm going to let that sink in just a sec. You digest that a little bit, people, while I get to the next page, the next little section. It'll be the funding. I've got to go to page 57. For those of you who have printed out copies, I'm going to page 57, and you can go there, too, and we'll see how this whole thing is going to get funded. We've heard a lot of, if you listen to talk radio, you'll hear, wouldn't this be nice for the secretary to be able to buy up all these distressed assets, and then he's supposed to make some money on it, and then pay, and we get the money back somehow, we get reimbursed as a
but they don't or, they don't tell you how he's going to make money on it. What happens if this thing goes on for 10 years before the price of the homes comes up, and what happens if the price of homes never comes up?
I'll just see, these guys aren't stupid. They have an angle on this.
And of course the thing is, right now of course the price would be based upon what the value of the homes would be. But what happens if the price of homes should drop another 50%?
Well,
then what happens to the money that they put in? Of course it's all destroyed.
Try it this way. You know how they do things. They buy things cheap and sell them high. Well, Right now, everything's cheap because of what happened with the credit. Well, they can fix the credit anytime they want, so they can buy all these things cheap and then somehow completely renovate their credit system as they seem able to do it will. Then, by the time the Department of Secretary, the Secretary of the Treasury has all these things, then they can loosen up credit and prices will go up. You got the picture? They can do something with it. But listen, Section 118 under funding. For the purpose of the authorities granted in this act and for the cost of administrating those authorities, the Secretary may use the proceeds of the sale of any securities issued under Chapter 31 of Title 31 of the United States Code and for the purposes for which securities may be issued under that title are extended. They're revising the U.S. Code. They're extended to include actions authorized by this act. So they can, they're going to...
Hold that thought, Mike. We'll be back in just a moment with Mike Schuller. All right, Mike. Mike is telling us about what the act actually says. And, of course, what it says is basically that the Secretary of the Treasury can go ahead and buy whatever he wants to and pay whatever he wants to. And but of course, down the line, of course, when the value of these securities goes back up, why, maybe the taxpayers will get back their money. Well, first of all, I mean, how do you know the price is going to go back up again? I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to go back up again. It could continue falling. In fact, it's anticipated the price of homes may fall another 50% from what they've already been down. So, I mean, they're promising to give us money, but basically these are the same people who told us that we had plenty of money for Medicare. It would never cost more than $9 billion a year by 1990. Of course, by 1990, Medicare was costing of the federal government $90 billion, not $9. They're consistently wrong. They're the same people who told us about the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had. Why should we think they would tell us the truth? But go right ahead, Mike.
Well, I think they wrote this in because they know they can make a lot of money. And it'll be that department's money. It'll be the secretary's money. Maybe not him personally, but...
Well, I think the people who are selling them these securities that aren't worth anything at all, and of course, since they are all personal friends of Henry Paulson, they can get as much money as he's willing to give them, and they will come out very well. It's not that the taxpayer is going to make any money. The Treasury Department's making money. It's not their purpose to make money. It is their purpose to reward the people who created the problem on Wall Street and, of course, to really destroy the value of our currency because there is no money. They're going to have to borrow this $720 million, $720 billion, which is the first installment, and then there'll be another $1 trillion, and then another $1 trillion, and then another $1 trillion down there. And in the process, they destroy the value of our currency. The people, of course, who sold the securities to Henry Paulson are going to do well. But what's going to happen to the value of our currency? And, of course, it's going to be destroyed, in my estimation. But go ahead, Mike.
Well, they're getting, in this act, the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008 is the title, which I have not given until just now. For them to start this, they get $50 million startup money. Then, after that, they get the $700 billion to spend buying assets. They're running it like a corporation with our money. Well, whatever you want to call it, whether they invent the money or just, you know, a few keystrokes of the computer. I wish I could do that. But then they get $700 billion to start buying up the United States, a large portion of it. And then they can start playing with that and then fund themselves. I can see an absolutely monstrous administration, actually a fascist administration growing out of this. The Secretary of the Treasury, while he is a part of the President's cabinet, he's going to have a lot more power than the President. The true power on this planet, aside from God, happens to be the Treasury, or the economic sector, the power of the money. They're the ones that control legislatures. They control militaries. Our vote has nothing to do with it. These people, we don't have anything to do. We have no oversight or control over the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. And they're going to be the ones controlling, really, the Secretary. They're just going to be telling, they will be his advisors. These people on the outside, the big money people on the outside, will be his advisors. He's just another puppet. We just have a whole system of puppet masters and puppets and puppet masters and puppets. And he's just one in the string.
And, of course, nobody ever points out the fact that we're having an election in November. And, of course, if Obama were to win, he would pick the Secretary of the Treasury in January of next year. And it could be an entirely different individual. And Henry Paulson would simply have to go back to his $40 million a year job at Goldman Sachs. So, basically, of course, people don't understand that Henry Paulson setting this thing up, I think they thought that McCain was going to win, but the way it was looking, I'll tell you, so many people are so mad at what's going on, they're ready to vote for Obama. It's like taking cyanide to get back at your wife, but at least a lot of people are going to probably vote for Obama simply because they're sick and tired of the way the Republicans have been running the government. So, go right ahead, Mike.
Well, for those who have their copies open, go to page 67. This bill, as many people have heard already, increases the statutory limit on the public debt. Right now, our limit is $10.615 trillion. We're into it for $9.6.5 trillion. So we've got a little over another trillion to go on the existing into the existing ceiling. All they're doing, they want their $700 billion. This bill was submitted.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mike Shuler is going through the 110-page bill that they presented to Congress after they were in session when nobody had a chance to read it, to find out what was in it. And Mike is saying that it's going to increase the national debt by $1 trillion, because right now I think that the upper limit is about 10.5?
Well, it's 0.7 trillion. They're increasing it by $700 billion.
All right. In other words, basically they're going to have to go out and borrow the $700 billion, but that's just the beginning. Of course, it's going to take trillions of dollars to buy up all these bad debts, and that's really going to inflate the debt mammothly, tremendously, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah. Well, yeah. What they the fascinating thing here is that the Treasury came up with this bill, submitted to the President, the Congress, and this is just one of the points in here. They want $700 billion to pull off this program and get all these distressed assets, start buying up Americas. So they say, okay, here's our bill. We want $700 trillion. Now you raise the debt ceiling.
Who's going to buy $700 billion of American debt at this present time? An awful lot of people throughout the world in the central banks of other countries like China and Japan and Germany, and they want to get rid of American debt because they know that the more debt a country has, the quicker its currency is going to decline. Why would you want to buy bonds in a country where the value of the currency is declining? Because when you cash it in, you get back less than you invested. So, I mean, I think they're going to have a very, very hard time, of course, actually borrowing that amount of money. And I think that's a real problem that nobody is facing. Who's going to put up the $700 billion? Or are they simply going to print the money and destroy the value of our currency?
That's a good question. I don't know where they're planning on getting it from, but you did have Bill Sari on, was it last night?
Right.
Talking about trillionaires out there somewhere who will. I know there's people out there, Bill Gates and all them, they're not the richest people in the world. These Arab princes and kings are not the richest people in the world. Those people, we're never going to know their faces or their names. That's just plain and simple. And who knows if they're going to put up the money. I don't know if it matters. It just seems like they're going to do it. The Senate already went ahead. And that was very tricky that they would have that Senate vote today because that completely intimidates the House. And so they've had a couple of days now for arm twisting, and I think they've probably written in a few things that'll soften it.
Well, hold that thought. Mike will be back in just a moment with Mike Schiller. Well, Dr. Stan, Mike is going through the legislation, pointing out the fact that one of the stipulations in this 110-page monstrosity is that they're going to increase the debt limit by another $700 billion right now. I think it was what about it was somewhere between 10.3 and 10.6 trillion dollars. And now, of course, they want to raise another $700 billion. That's where the $700 billion is coming from. They're going to create more debt. We already have a debt that we will never be able to pay off. The entire gross domestic project, product, GDP, gross domestic product of the United States, is about $14 trillion, and we owe, of course, just on the federal debt right now, of course, almost $10 trillion. But then, of course, there's a state, there's a local, the private debt, all the debts. The total debt of the United States today is over $50 trillion, of which, of course, almost $10 trillion is federal debt. But, of course, then there's, of course, all the mandates, of course, the promised Medicare, Social Security drug bill. That is, of course, actually taking us up to $50 to $60 trillion right there. We will never be able to pay off our debts. They know that. But right now they want to get us through until they can create a war and then destroy the whole value of our currency and start all over again. They have no intention of paying this debt back. But right now, of course, we're talking about the legislation. So pick it up. I think it's very interesting that the legislation, which nobody has mentioned before, the legislation increases the federal debt level by another $700 billion. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that just, I thought that's so cute that they want the extra money, and so they just get Congress to rubber stamp it, is all it amounts to.
And then we just go out and borrow the money.
I don't know. If they borrow it, that means we're beholden.
If you borrow it, you have to pay interest on it. You know what the interest rate on $700 billion at 6% interest would be? And that would be an awful lot of money, believe me.
More money than I can count on.
I mean, basically, right now we're paying about $350 billion a year in interest, and of course it would raise it to probably well over, of course, up to $450 billion a year. That's just interest on the national debt. But go right ahead, Mike.
Well, yeah, we're, according to the debt calculators out on the net, we're at something like $2.67 billion a day, or $2.47, something like that, that the debt is going up. People, naive people are talking about, oh, well, we can pay off the $700 billion. You know, that's no big deal. And really, what is $700 billion compared to the overall economic activity in the United States? I think it's really pretty small. The thing is, it's getting bigger all the time, and it's just we've gone, the national debt has, tripled since George Bush took office?
Well, when he got in, it was about $5.8 trillion. Well, today it is about $10 trillion. But we are actually increasing the national debt $1 trillion every 15 months at the present time. $1 trillion every 15 months. Remember, it took us 200 years from 1787 until the year 1980 to accumulate $1 trillion in debt. And now we're, of course, getting another $1 trillion of debt every 15 months. Go right ahead, Mike.
Yeah, okay. Well, look at it that way, then. It took up until the year 2000 to get up to $5 billion, roughly speaking. And it's doubled in 8 years since then. That's not a pretty picture. Now, one thing cute, another thing cute, excuse me, the very troublesome Section 8 that was in the, they call it the text of draft proposal that was submitted by the Treasury, the three-pager from last week, that troublesome Section 8, decisions by the Secretary pursuant to the authority of this Act are non-reviewable and committed to agency discretion and may not be reviewed by any court of law or any administrative agency. Now, you could say, thankfully, that sentence is not in this 110-page item, but effectively and practically speaking, it hasn't changed. What have Paulson's statements been this week about how he does not want to have all that kind of autonomy? And what they've done is written in various sections of congressional oversight, and there's a congressional oversight panel. I don't know if that's worth spending too much time on.
Can the congressional oversight panel stop him from doing things, or are they just going to see what he's already done?
It's mainly just observational. They don't have any teeth. There's plenty of ways. Everywhere this congressional oversight appears, and it's about four or five different places in the 110 pages, it's kind of a marshmallow deal where they can the Treasury can do whatever it wants. The membership of that panel is one member appointed by the Speaker of the House, wonderful, one member appointed by the Minority Leader of the House, one member appointed by the Majority Leader of the Senate, one member appointed by the Minority Leader of the Senate, and one member appointed by the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate. There's five of them, and it goes like that, and it's just too easy to stack them.
And, of course, the thing is, of course, all of these people are bought and paid for. Certainly Nancy Pelosi, they could send to prison for what she's been doing as far as funneling money to her husband from campaign funds. But so she'll go right along with doing whatever she's told, as will so many of these people, because they're all on the take. I mean, they hire their husbands. As Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein, had all sorts of relationships with her husband, which, of course, her husband's fabulously wealthy, and she's funneled all sorts of property to him, gold mines, a chocolate gold mine. I mean, one of the greatest land scandals of all time, legislation specifically designed to enrich Dianne Feinstein. So these people are all susceptible. They're going to go along. They're not going to buck the system. If they did, they'd end up going to prison, where a lot of them really deserve to be. Unfortunately, we no longer have morality. We've taken morality out of our schools. We've even taken morality out of so much of our religious teachings, and we've come around to the fact that we become the determinant of what's right and wrong. Go right ahead, Mike.
I'm looking for one here. The foreign governments.
No, I thought there was something in there about we would help to bail out all these foreign investments as well. In other words, a lot of the foreign central banks are in trouble. A lot of the foreign investors are in trouble. And Henry Paulson wants to be able to bail out foreign banks and foreign investors and foreign central banks. Is that right?
This is page 32 under section 112. It's called Coordination with Foreign Authorities and Central Banks. It says, the Secretary shall coordinate as appropriate with foreign financial authorities and central banks to work toward the establishment of similar programs. So they want to do this all over the world by such authorities and central banks. I know they're, as you've covered so often, their central banks are pretty much like ours.
And they all work together. They work in concert. Professor Quigley covers that on page 324 of his book, Tragedy and Hope. If you have the book, look it up, page 324. If you don't have the book, get it. You need to read it because it will explain to you how international finance really works. Tragedy and Hope, a history of the world in our time, was so important that somebody came, bought up in 1967, 68, bought up Macmillan Company and destroyed the place in the first half of the book. And we have an interview with the author who tells you this story, that story I just told you, a one of a kind. It's certainly one of the smartest things I ever did was to buy the rights to that tape from Professor Quigley's widow, and we turned out literally thousands of them. Go right ahead.
To read through the rest just a little bit more. To the extent that such foreign financial authorities or banks hold troubled assets, that's like ours, as a result of extending financing to financial institutions, now we know that's what central banks do, or at least ours does, the financial institutions that have failed or defaulted on such financings, such troubled assets qualify for purchase under Section 101. which we'll get to in just a second.
Was he talking about domestic or foreign banks?
Foreign. This is all foreign.
Foreign banks. In other words, we're going to purchase foreign assets that are faulty to actually to prop up the foreign economic systems. Mr. Paulson, of course, is an internationalist, a globalist, and they want to stabilize the entire financial system of the world with America tax money. Why don't they use foreign tax money to do it? Because America, of course, is going to control this whole thing.
What happens by the time we get to global currency, it's all going to be the same anyhow. All the other national central banks are controlled or whatever by our Federal Reserve. They've got their fingers in everything all over the globe.
And I think people should understand that within the last week and a half or 2 weeks, we've given almost $750 billion, to foreign central banks and foreign banking institutions to try to keep them afloat. Why don't they use their own money? Why are we using the American taxpayers' money to spread all over the world to keep the rest of the world economic system afloat? Because we want to maintain this phony system. The best thing we could do it would be crumble and go down in flames, and then we could start in with an asset-backed security currency that could not be inflated, would not be a fractional reserve system built upon debt. Because when debt contracts, then money disappears, and that's just what's happening today. I mean, trillions of dollars have simply gone up in smoke, and all the money that the banks had invested in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac stock, it's all gone. And all the people who invested in AIG, American Investment Groups, the largest insurance company in the world, all the people who invested in their stock, it's all gone. And the bondholders there are going to lose a lot of their money as well. And this is happening in so many of our major financial institutions. Their stock is worth nothing. What happened to its value? It's evaporated. And with that, of course, the destruction of debt comes the destruction of monies. And we're seeing a contraction of the whole world monetary supply. And this whole legislation is intent upon trying to inflate the amount of money out there, but it's like pouring money into a black hole. And, of course, the more you pour in, the more you got to pour in, and the more you destroy the value of our currency, which is really all about. That's what Mr. Paulson and the internationalists want to do, destroy our currency, destroy the middle class, impoverish our people, and establish a one-world order, a one-world currency, a one-world religion with a one-world leader. We go right ahead, Mike.
Remember a little while ago we were talking about how the Congress gave up its power over the money to the Federal Reserve back in 1913. Now, in the same way, and that's for those that don't know that, it's Article 1, Section 8, where the powers of the Congress are enumerated point for point. Now, with this bill, Congress is giving up more power to not exactly to the Fed, but to this Treasury Department, which is controlled by the Fed. We have actually, what this bill does, I almost forgot this, the Federal Reserve and its Board of Governors, for these 95 years, has existed outside of the federal government. Now, they're coming inside the federal government. You've got the Board of Governors, the functions of the board, the FDIC comes in, and so foxes aren't just running around the outside eating chickens on the inside. But back to this point of the what else the Congress is giving to the financial sector. I'm just going to call it giving it to the Federal Reserve, although I think that's a sloppy way for me to say it, but it's an effective way. The second power enumerated for Congress in Section 8 is to regulate commerce with foreign nations. But they're giving that power to the Treasury or the Federal Reserve. I just want to use that interchangeably now because we have got that economic power structure now invading the federal government itself, not just existing on the outside as it has by way of the Federal Reserve and other structures that it's got. Now,
basically, what you're talking about is the partnership between government and finance. And, of course, basically, when it comes between a choice between government and finance, who's going to be in charge? The financiers are going to be in charge because they got the money, and they're going to then be able to control the government. They call it fascism.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned this section 101 a few minutes ago, and just to review, just very briefly, to the extent that such foreign financial authorities or banks hold troubled assets as a result of extending financing to financial institutions that have failed or defaulted on such financing, such troubled assets qualify for purchase under Section 101, which is this Troubled Assets Relief Program, TARP, we've been hearing about for the last couple of weeks. And this is the credit trap that we have fallen into. We, as the American consumer, have been taking a bad rap. Now, we could be convicted for being stupid, but we're not guilty for this whole problem. We have a problem in our psyche, which has been exploited by these by the big bankers. I'll just call them big bankers, big fat bankers. We love our credit. We can go buy all kinds of things, and we know we're going to be able to make the payments, or even not. But we're going to use that credit. It's dangled in front of us. If you most people listening have set a mouse trap before, and you put a nice smelly piece of cheese in it. Now, can you really blame? When you get a dead rat out of that trap, do you laugh at him and call him stupid? Well, no, he was just eating his cheese. He just was looking for dinner. He had a weakness. He needs to fill his belly. Now, we're a little stupider than that mouse. We fell for this thing called credit. Instead of saving our money and working ahead to where we can withdraw money from our bank account or get it out from our mattress to buy something, we fall for this stupid thing called credit. So, but these guys, the ones that formed the Federal Reserve in the first place, mainly you want to look at Warburg. He knew how to do that because he was so closely involved with the Third Reich. But no, that was before the Third Reich. But the German institutions, and they created this system, knowing this human weakness, this fallacy, and so they did exploit us. Yeah, we're dumb. They're smart, but they're the ones, they're the guilty ones. They're the ones that are bringing this nation down, and it's for their own purposes. Now, we have to set that straight. We can't listen to Limbaugh and O'Reilly and all these other sickos out there that want to paint us black. And how often do you listen closely to Limbaugh? How often do the words Federal Reserve ever pass through his lips?
Or Council on Foreign Relations, or his close relationship with the members of the elite of this country. I said he, of course, Rush Limbaugh does a wonderful job for the establishment. He's one of the finest conservatives that money could buy on over 600 stations. But, of course, he is very well paid, I think $400-some-odd million for 8 years for the good work he does for the people who rule the world. We'll be right back. Well, Mike, you've got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Yeah. Well, it's very clear. They are able to... Oh, boy, I just lost the section. I really wanted to get into it. I've got it marked here somewhere, but it doesn't matter if I can't.
I think it's the most important thing we've said, Mike, is the fact that this legislation was to give them the ability to bail out the whole world, to bail out other countries' financial systems, not America, but other countries. Why would we be so concerned about them? Why wouldn't they have to be concerned about themselves?
Well, it's not a bailout. It's blackmail. We have to remember that. What they're doing is in buying all these troubled assets, they're buying up the world. What they're buying now is a small part of it, but they're going to buy more, and they're going to buy more. All they have to do is keep upping the ante. They're skimming off the bottom that fails. Now, they're taking that part now, and then what happens when the dust settles? There's a new bottom. Give them 5 or 10 years or 100 years. They're going to take that, too. And there will be a new bottom after that, and they're going to keep on taking it. We don't have money. We have credit. It's one of the most important things for anybody to understand, and it's one of the most elusive ones. What does a bank sell, for example? It sells credit. It makes money by selling credit. They give you credit on your house or whatever, and you give them money. What is it that you're giving to them? You're giving them your day's labor. All that comes off of your back, whether you're a white collar or blue collar, it comes off of your back. the hours and days and months and years of your life go to the bank in the form of payments that you make for the credit that they sold you, the credit which they got from nowhere. Ultimately, it's a system established by the Federal Reserve for their own enrichment. Read, you get a copy, call Stan tomorrow, get a copy of That Creature from Jekyll Island. Read chapter 2, if nothing else. It's about 16 pages. The title of it is, the name of the game is Bailout. Thank you, G. Edward Griffin. I'm sure you're listening right now. You wrote the greatest book in the world. He did this in 1994. He said the title, I'll say it again, the name of the game is Bailout. What are we hearing about the last couple of weeks? He knew that that would apply to now because he studied the Federal Reserve from its inception. That's all they ever do. They make themselves look like the good guys riding in on the white horse with the white hat. They're the devil in disguise. All they want to do is suck the life out of us, and they're doing a really good job of it.
We're out of time, Mike. God bless. Right. Thanks so much for doing all the hard work. I pretty appreciate it. Talk to you later. Well, our guest has been Mike Schuller, and of course, he was suggesting everybody get a copy of The Creature from Jekyll Island, written by our good friend Ed Griffin, who I first met 46 years ago, as of December of this year. And of course, he says, read chapter 2 entitled Bailout, tells you how the system works. And of course, this is a privately owned central bank, owned by bankers, created by bankers, for the benefit of bankers and to impoverish the people, and now, of course, ultimately to take away our sovereignty and transfer it to a one-world government. Well, of course, this is the time I need to mention that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out across America on over 60 outlets every week. We're reaching people, at least some of them are understanding what's happening and telling others, and of course, along with the other people in talk radio, we're having an impact. Congress voted against the banksters, and what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day, I don't know, but they'll probably get their legislation through, but hopefully more and more people will understand this is not a bailout for the homeowners. This is a bailout for international financiers and the transfer of wealth from the middle class to the very wealthy and the impoverishment of our people. So we suggest you get a copy of my talk on the financial tsunami from a couple of years ago and the syllabus that goes with that. A copy of my talk on the forbidden secret, because it ties into this whole thing. There really are forces out there working behind the scenes that have a different agenda because they worship a different God. And there's a syllabus that goes with the forbidden secret. You'll certainly want to get the pamphlets on the history of money and the financial meltdown. They're inexpensive little pamphlets. And then, of course, the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and the book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France. Those three books, the DVD we're talking about, of course, the pamphlets, will give you a tremendous insight into what's going on. We do have a safe set on the financial Armageddon as well. You need to understand what's happening, because unless you make your preparations now, most people are going to end up being impoverished and lose everything they've spent their life working for. And that's what the banksters want, but don't let them do it, at least not to you. And so, you know, you're going to have to make your moves and make them rapidly right now. Get out of the stock market. Get out of the dollars as best you can and do everything you can to get out of debt. Because, of course, those people are in debt. Those people who have the money in banks, those people who are invested in the conventional investments are going to lose everything. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Of course, we encourage you to think very seriously about attending our all-day seminar. It's going to be on the 26th of October, a little less than 4 weeks from now. We've already got a number of people coming from across America, and we're bringing in, of course, Dr. Russell Blaylock, Pat Wood, Joanna Michelson, going to talk on the supernatural. She was a medium. She was in contact with the beings, the spiritual beings from the other dimension. You'll find it a fascinating talk. They'll all be fascinating talks. Patrick Wood will be here to talk on finances, and you'll learn a lot from him. Well, again, our telephone number, if you'd like to come, you're going to have reservations because we're serving lunch. And our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can hear our program live 4 hours a day. The program is on a satellite stream 9 hours a day. You can get our MP3 programs, our archive programs, our blog programs. Encourage other people to listen and to get educated. This is the time when people are going to listen. This is the time people are concerned. They know something's wrong. They're looking for answers, and we've got them. We understand the spiritual battle that's taking place and the dark forces that are intent upon impoverishing our people. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty.